I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the unique story of the German quintet with a rock and roll dream and a musical sting.
We were thinking, especially when we started the Scorpions, we was born in the wrong place, because we had much more feel to the English-American kind of music than the German bands did.
We were not proud of our country, and our parents were not proud of our country. They just survived the war, you know? So that's the way we got up. And starting as young musicians playing English and American music, it was in a way something like an attempt to be part of the world community, to escape a place where you feel this burden. No one like you. I can't wait for the night with you. Hi, this is Klaus Meine.
Rudolf Schenker.
From the Scorpions. We're in the studio for Deadly Sting, the best of Scorpions.
Hanover, Germany is half a world away from the birthplace of rock and roll. The Mississippi Delta, Memphis, Tennessee, the backwoods of Georgia, and the south side of Chicago. But the rockin' rhythms and rebellious spirit were nevertheless discovered by post-war German kids. Rock and roll was imported into Germany by Hollywood movies, by American servicemen stationed on U.S. military bases there, and by the notorious pirate radio stations broadcasting illegally from ships out on the North Sea. Formed in Hanover, Germany in 1971, the Scorpions are the quintessential long shot for international rock success. Against all odds, the Scorpions relentlessly followed their dream, while consistently releasing solid efforts and touring tirelessly. But long before, young Klaus Meine had been stung by American rock and roll songs with strange titles and lyrics untranslatable in the German language. Yet the meaning was crystal clear to Klaus Meine.
It was the spirit that really got me so, like, you know, there was no escape, you know. It was like, bang, it hit me. And I had no even idea what it was all about. But it was so cool, and I loved it so much. You know, it was later when I found out what this means or that means, you know. And then even though the song became even better and stronger, you know, it was like a missing piece of a puzzle, you know. Yeah. But in those days, I had no idea, you know. I speak very little English. I learned some English in school, you know. It was very little. But I didn't need to understand a word in those days. The music and the message was so strong, so powerful, so I understood everything, you know. And that's how I got into music. But the next step was to be in a band and to write lyrics yourself. I mean, I tell you, that was a beating. That was very difficult.
I'm sure.
That was very difficult to do in the early days. It became much, much better as we were growing older and getting up from album to album. And then especially because of touring and not just playing in Germany, but very early in our career, we went to England, we went outside of Germany and especially playing in England, and then especially playing in the United States from 79 on, you know. I mean, we learned the language, you know, it became like a second skin, even though there's probably, when you listen to me right now, strong accent. On the record, you couldn't tell
That's
the difference.
True.
Before the Scorpions gained a foothold in America in 1979, they had released no less than 5 albums in the States. Yet for various economic reasons, they were never allowed to tour here until the release of Love Drive. First Klaus Meine, then Rudolf Schenker of Scorpions.
For us as a German band singing in English, it was very important to go to England. And in 75, we went for the very first time to England. We played like 30 dates in clubs in holes.
Rudy,
you know, every place.
Holes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Liverpool. The first gig we did was in Liverpool
at the Cavern Club. The Cavern Club.
And I tell you one thing. It was a nice,
but it was not the original one. It was a rebuilt one. They had rebuilt this across the street.
But
you know?
That was our first gig in England. And I tell you one thing. We played, I think, before in France, and our sound mixer.
We came
mixer,
over on the ferry. Yeah,
and our sound mixer destroyed many speakers because he puts everything too loud and somehow destroyed. We had problems. We had to go first to London to get the speakers and then to Liverpool. But now we didn't know that the
there was a time
clock,
change.
The time change. It was, and we didn't know that the club starts 12 o'clock.
Midnight.
So, yeah, and we came there around 8 or 9. Everything closed.
Everything said, was like there was nobody. It was dark in that street.
Oh,
that,
we
and we
it.
Thought we missed our
you
first
missed
gig.
Your first gig.
By the time the Scorpions arrived in America, they had polished their live show in part because of the addition of Rudolf Schenker's younger brother, guitarist Michael Schenker, fresh from success in the band UFO, and a second lead guitar player, young Matthias Jobs. Here's Scorpion singer Klaus Meine and guitarist Rudolf Schenker.
The very big step for us in those years was to go to Japan in 77, 78. You know, that was the first time with Virgin Killer became like a very popular album there. And between 73 and 78, we produced our first albums with Dieter Dirks as a producer in Germany, like in Trance was the first time we did. And so we've been touring all over Europe, and we were supporting some big bands coming from America at the time, like Kiss, for example.
Yeah.
I think we were like the first German band supporting them when they came on their first German tour, I think, in those days.
They picked us really by listening to the stuff.
Yeah,
and then, you know, the Americans, we got phone calls from America because by telephone number in the bank, there was my telephone number, Rainbow Music.
You put your phone number on the album?
Yeah, because we had no office. We had no management. Management was not allowed in Germany. Management was not allowed. If you do management in these days, you would go in jail. So, yes.
What?
Yeah, it was not officially allowed.
Having never made it to America until 1979, which significantly retarded their career growth, the Stingmeisters realized that they had to make up some ground fast. Again, Scorpions lead singer Klaus Meine.
In 79, we came over for the first time to the United States and did a big tour and started like not playing clubs. We started like playing in front of 70,000 people in Cleveland, Ohio, at the huge stadium at this World Series of Rock with Aerosmith, with Ted Nugent, with Journey, with Thin Lizzy, all
AC/DC.
Those bands. And even though we were like the first band in the morning at 10 o'clock, like, and they said, you German guys, you have 30 minutes, you know, to play.
Minutes.
And we played, we're still playing at 45 minutes. And they said, how can we stop those Germans? You know, we were playing like for our life, you know.
After working so hard for a decade to make it to America, the Scorpions were facing a serious threat to the band's very future, as Klaus Meine and Rudolf Schenker will reveal. And by the fall of 1981, the Scorpions had overcome language barriers, international laws, lack of management, and several key personnel changes. But a serious throat condition threatened to silence Scorpions' lead singer Klaus Meine forever.
I will never, ever forget winter, early 1982 here in America, the release of the Blackout album. I remember it like it was yesterday. Why does that album's production sound so much bigger than any Scorpions album before it?
I'll tell you why. This, first of all, we had enough time because, as you remember, Klaus lost his voice, had a few operation, found his voice back.
A few, here we go.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah, few already. Yeah. Few operation. Then we had the time to spend, and we was working on the album. We had, I think it was also, we had a new machine from Telefunken called.
Let me ask you this, Klaus. What range of emotions goes through a professional singer's mind when you find out that you have a problem, a physiological problem with your voice, and you're going to have a surgeon take very sharp instruments and operate on your voice to attempt to save it. What? And this happened twice?
Twice.
Do you remember those days? Those
I never forget. Those had to be dark days.
Scary, dark days.
Yeah, dark, very dark days. I mean, I figured out that I had a problem in the studio when we were in the pre-production for this record for Blackout, you know, and there's some of the songs, you know, listen to Dynamite or Now or No One Like You, you know. And they have, I mean, the way I sing is I sing in a high range voice, you know, but all of a sudden all my high pitch was gone. It was gone, you know, and in those pre-production sessions, you know, it was like weird.
In France.
We went in south of France, we rented a house and we're working with a producer, with Dieter Dirks, in this house, and I just couldn't sing the way I used to sing. And it turned out that all those years of touring, you know, and the way I was recording, and also when I listening back to those records, I mean, all the backing vocals you hear there, you know, it's not let's record this part of vocals and flying in on every part. I was singing all those parts in every bloody verse and chorus, whatever had to be done, you know, and overdubbed and whatever, and tripled and quadruple and I don't know what, you know. And Dieter Dirks was the guy always going, Klaus, how you like this voice? I found a higher voice, you know. Can you top this, you know? So I've been doing this for so many years, and I always thought it's no problem, you know. This goes on forever, but that was wrong. So my voice, when I went to the first doctor and in those days, and it looked into my vocal cords, she said, "What you're doing, you know, for your living?" I said, "I'm a singer." Said, "You look, you should look for a new job." And
oh,
I went,
my.
God, you
oh,
know.
Oh, that would be just...
You know, so that was very bad, you know. It was not a good doctor either, you know. So, and then I really started meeting like real good people, you know. And but the reality, the fact was, the matter of fact was, I had to have an operation because there were nodes on my vocal cords, like a guitar player, you know, I had on
calluses on the fingers,
you know?
Only your
exactly.
calluses were in your
exactly,
throat.
Exactly, you know, because those vocal cords, they like, with every sound, every powerful sound you make, it goes like, bang, you know? It's very strong, you know? And without a real education as a singer, where you... work your voice, your breathe differently, and all this. I never did this, you know. I was like a natural born singer, you know. So, and I always like singing from the bottom of my heart, you know, with all the power, you know, but not thinking about too much about technique and all this, you know. So, I was scared to death. I was scared to death, you know. I went in for this operation, and nobody could tell me my voice would be the same, you know.
So there and was no guarantee.
No, there was no guarantee
that this was going to work.
But there was, the only thing was, you have to do this, or you just
you
cannot sing again.
No choice, no choice.
You have to do it. So there was no choice. So I went into the hospital. I had this operation. The worst was I had to go back into the hospital because, you know, this whole operation was not a real success. I had to go back in for a second time, which was a nightmare. But at that point, I had no choice, you know. And after that, where I'd still, I don't know how many weeks, where I had to rebuild it very slowly, you know. I went up to Rudolf and said, you know, I don't want to stop this whole process of making the record, you know. You should go on and look for a new lead singer, you know. Because I have a feeling, when I knew all the songs, and my ability to sing was like zero, you know. So my feeling was, make this record, find a new singer, because this is the end of my road, you know.
Wow.
And that was terrible. I went to concerts, I see other bands, and I saw those bands different, I remember. I was almost crying when I heard those people sing, you know. I went like, God, you know, this is what I used to do, you know. This is, and I had a feeling I cannot do it anymore. And Rudolf was the guy who said, you know, he kicked my ass. He said, no way, you know, you do whatever you can do for your voice, and we just wait.
Well,
and
the that support was
in the bad, very bad situation in those dark days, you know, that was really a shining light on the other side and very proof of friendship,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's absolutely. We go through this and we wait for you, you know, and nobody knew at this point. It was, for me, a very dark moment and looking back, a great moment in my life because it gave me a whole new life as a singer, because when I look back, from then on, it really started.
Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and there's a whole lot more here at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Klaus Meine and Rudolf Schenker. Love at First Sting from the Scorpions.
Hi, it's Rudolf Schenker of the Scorpions.
Hi, this is Klaus Meine of the Scorpions. Welcome back in the studio.
Willkommen. I'm Redbeard, and Scorpions lead singer Klaus Meine still has fond memories of recording what became the Scorpions' bestseller, Love at First Sting.
We've been working all day long, all night long, and at midnight we went to a pub next door. We all get drunk and invited to have the pub to the studio like at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then we did another version of Still Loving You.
Yeah.
And next day we listen back and we throw it away, you know. It's like, God, you know.
Yeah.
And in Stockholm at the ABBA studio there, you know, the Polar studio, there were lots of people in the control room. And I used to sing in those days in many sessions in the control room, you know, because I didn't like the headphones. And so, but then we had all the noise on the microphone, you know, all the crap, you know. But I liked the atmosphere, you know, and there were all those guests and people hanging out in the control room, you know, and I started thinking, time, and it's time. All of a sudden, this Swedish girl goes, woo, you know, and I go, God, you know.
It was actually the former wife from Quincy Jones.
And we went back to Germany and we started again. And I had the feeling, oh, I had such a good version in Sweden already, you know. But then anyway, somehow we made it. And Dirks was such a perfectionist in a way also. And he was such a, like, man, he could really beat you up in the studio and really go for it. No, we have to do this and do this and do this again and again. Hour after hour after hour after hour. Well, and the result was Rock You Like a Hurricane, Big City Nights, Still Loving You, all the big ones, Bad Boys, Running Wild, all those songs. And it turned out to be a big, 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 big album.
Just check.
always concentrated really on writing lyrics. And I never really wanted to compete with Rudolf because he really came up with always great songs, great riffs, and he always wrote those songs for my voice, you know. So because my position was always not, this is what I want to say, it's so cool, you know, I had to say something everybody thinks that's cool, you know. It's a band thing, you know. It's not, I like this, this is my opinion, this is what I want to sing, you know. No, it was like, hey, Matthias goes, no, I don't like it. What you mean with this, you know? I don't like this, you know? Come. It was always this thing. It was not easy. And Dirks was always also somebody, you know, who wanted to always have these sexy lyrics and all this stuff, you know? So, of course, Herman was in those days, like in the 80s, talking about lyrics, also a strong guy in the band who came up with all those great ideas from touring. Like, I mean, Rock You Like a Hurricane, going back to Rock You Like a Hurricane, I mean, the hook line was my idea, but in the verses, you know, I give her inches and feed her well, baby, you know, all this, you know, it was very much Herman.
Yeah.
Rock You Like a Hurricane, originally appearing on the Scorpions' 1984 3 million seller Love at First Sting. By summer 1989, the desire for freedom from the repressive communist government in the vast USSR, including East Germany, was symbolized by blue jeans and rock and roll, while the internationally known notorious symbol for communism's fear and repression was the Berlin Wall, which had divided the East German capital for 30 years. USSR Premier Mikhail Gorbachev's philosophy of glasnost was allowing a very limited, controlled number of Western events into the Soviet Union, including 1989's Moscow Peace and Music Festival at the massive Lenin Stadium, featuring Ozzy Osbourne, Bon Jovi, and Motley Crue. But of all the bands who played, the huge crowd of over 100,000 Soviets clearly felt that the Scorpions were the hometown team. Here are singer Klaus Meine, joined by guitarist Rudolf Schenker of Scorpions.
Then, the end of the 80s, 88, we went to Leningrad the first time, and we opened this Russian chapter, you know, and it was such an amazing experience to go to the other side of the world, to go behind the Iron Curtain, to play concerts in Leningrad in 88. In 89, we talked about it at the Moscow Music Peace Festival. And all the inspiration, you know, I mean, what we do is all about inspiration, right? But with Moscow, it was so massive. The inspiration, the power of inspiration was just massive. There were so many kids from East Germany, from the DDR, you know, at this Moscow show. They seen us there the first time.
Yeah.
They had never chance to in East Germany. We never played there. They came to Moscow to see us. You know, and those 2 days in Lenin Stadium, 100,000 kids, and many of them, we talked to many of them, and they traveled all the way. And we had the feeling it's all losing up, and the attitude from the Russians, you know, everybody could sense that it was changing, you know.
Thank you.
Big City Nights, from Love at First Sting, from the Scorpions.
Hi, it's Rob Schenker of the Scorpions.
Hi, this is Klaus Meiner of the Scorpions. Welcome back in the studio.
Donka dudes, I'm Redbeard.
And that was his whole inspiration for Wind of Change, you know. And that's why the song was written before the Berlin Wall came down.
Mm.
But it was what we all experienced in Moscow in those days.
That was the first experience we had, what happening in Russia. And then 1 year later, when we came back and we saw all the changes already, seeing the soldiers throwing their heads on stage and stuff like this, we said, on singing with us, Still Loving You, the whole stadium, there was really something, a thrill, which was that we said that we can't believe. That's that a different
word.
It was
unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, you know. And the attitude, the whole atmosphere was different. And we had a jam session, so somebody gave me a balalaika as a present, you know, a Russian guy. And we were playing for German television back in the USSR, you know. You know? So, and it was an amazing vibe, you know.
Yeah.
It was an amazing vibe. And it was really like a spirit of hope, you know, because the Russians were always like, for us, when we grew up, like the bad guys. But when we played there first in 88, you know, we had a wonderful experience. And coming back there a year later, and when we played in Moscow, it was like, God, it was really like rock and roll at that point with the Scorpions and Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Ozzy Osbourne. Was a huge stadium festival, you know. All these bands, and it had an impact on the youth, you know, on the young generation. They wanted to be a part,
of course,
of the whole world, you know.
Moscow and down to Gorky Park, listening to the wind of change. An August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change. That we could be so close, like brothers. The future's in the air, can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change.
originally on the Scorpions' 1990 album Crazy World. In 1990, Wind of Change blew around the world, transcending geopolitical borders and blowing away oppressive ideologies upon the gentle breeze of freedom and self-determination, which in turn became the greatest peaceful revolution in history. And Klaus Meine reminds us that the members of the Scorpions were at the very epicenter of it all, Moscow's Gorky Park.
This inspiration was so strong, I followed the Moskva down to Gorky Park, listening to the Wind of Change, because that's what we just did. You know, we were all on a boat on the Moskva, sitting, we were staying at the Ukraina, which is a big hotel there, and there was a barbecue one night, you know, at the Gorky Park, and they put up signs in the trees, Hard Rock Cafe Moscow, you know. They had no Hard Rock Cafe then, but it was like Hard Rock Cafe Moscow. And we were traveling on a boat down on the Moskva to Gorky Park. You know, all the musicians, all those bands from America, from England, from Germany, from Russia, journalists from all over the world, and Russian soldiers, so the Red Army people, you know. And then we were sitting in Gorky Park, and out of the speakers it was the rhythm of love, you know, and whatever. I went, God, this is Moscow. Wow. We're here in the middle of Moscow. The whole world is changing. And when we went up on stage, you know, and 100,000 people were singing Still Loving You with us, you know, and the Russian army people, they were supposed to be security. They went crazy like the audience, you know. It was a moment. It makes your hair stand up, you know. It gives you goosebumps all over your body just to think about it, you know. And it was such a strong inspiration.
The ultimate expression of the power of rock music to convey the spirit of freedom came when none other than Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev asked to meet with the musical ambassadors, the members of the Scorpions.
So I just had to write this song. I don't know why. I was not thinking about it. It just came out of me. It was floating through my body, you know. I had not to think about it. It's just the way it was, you know. And I just remember I felt very nervous playing it to the guys the first time. So I made a tape where the song was half finished. It was just the whistling and the verses, and the C part, the bridge. You know, that's what I had. And on the flight to America, I played it to the guys on the plane. And I was very nervous about that, because in a way it was my first song, you know, where I had also came up with the music, you know. But they liked it, but they said it might not be finished, you know. And when we met with Bruce Fairbairn, who unfortunately passed away too long ago.
Yes,
you know, when we met with him and our manager, Doc McGee, we played him a couple of songs. And he said, this could be a huge hit, you know, but it needs a good chorus. You know, that's missing. A chorus is missing. So when I came home from that trip, I wrote the chorus and the whole thing came together, you know. And so I think Bruce had definitely an influence in how this idea came all together, because... And of course, everybody said, there's something missing. It could be a great song. But of course, nobody, including me, never thought it could be such a big hit, you know. This was emotional, and it was very true, and it hit a certain nerve. And it became, in a way, like a soundtrack to the politics of Gorbachev, who heard the song. And there's another little story. When when this song became a big hit, Rudolf said, Klaus, you must record a version in Russian. And I said, God, how can I cannot sing in Russian? I did it.
Right.
And it was a beating to sing this in Russian. You know, it was not easy, you know, but looking back, I really enjoyed doing it. And I think when Gorbachev heard the song, and when he heard the Russian version, I mean, I've probably been the first German singer ever to sing in Russian. You know, the band was, before Wind of Change, very big in Russia, very big. Mega big, you know. Still Loving You was a huge hit in Russia, you know. But with this song, it was another dimension, and it was about them as well, you know. And it was so exciting, because this whole Russian adventure was for us as a German band growing up like a German band, and because of the history, we went to the Russians and said, our parents came with tanks, we're coming with guitars.
We'll be right back.
I'm Redbeard. We'll say Auf Wiedersehen after this. This is Redbeard in the studio saying Dankeschön to my guests, Rudolf Schenker and Klaus Meine of Scorpion. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can hear a whole lot more when you visit inthestudio.net.